Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 31, Chris Adams Encourages Growth. Here's a quick shout out to those listeners in Canada, specifically Ontario, Quebec, New Brunswick, British Columbia, and a shout out to those in San Juan, Puerto Rico. With that, let's get started. If you're part of a team such as human resources or learning and development, and you support different business units, you probably want to be seen as a business partner to them rather than a commodity. But unfortunately, a lot of them treat you like an order taker. They just want to come in and say, I need team building, or I need safety training. Well, how do you change that? Enter Chris Adams. Chris is the guy you call to transform your team's perception or perceived value from a barrier to getting what you want to a business partner that can amplify how you achieve business goals. Chris works with department heads on helping their teams transform themselves to be more of a business partner, and he offers workshops to help them with that transformation. In fact, a few times I've helped him facilitate some of those types of workshops. Having worked many years at Hanshaw and with the now retired Dana Robinson, Chris is a guy who can get this job done. Part 1, Small Addition Amplifies the Performance Review Effect. If you've ever been involved in process mapping, what you're trying to do is document how to get work done. And ideally, it's a way of standardizing the steps so you have the same outcome. Well, documenting your processes is important, and it does help with consistency. Unfortunately, there is some variation. Different people execute the process, even following the steps exactly as prescribed, with varying results. Some are more effective than others. And it's how they practice doing the process that makes the difference. For example, in a retail store, when you greet the customer and you follow the steps, everyone follows the steps, some might do it a little differently, not in changing the steps. But for example, they may get to know their customers by name. And when they greet the customer, they greet the customer by name. And when that happens, customers are more likely to come back. But, you know, it's not just, okay, let's update the process so they learn customers' names. It's not that simple. People tend to practice processes differently. That's just the reality. In this first story, Chris is going to explain how someone, a boss of his, practice performance reviews a little bit differently than how other managers do it, although the manager followed the same process. Here's Chris.
You know, sometimes we, in the moment, don't credit the impacts that people have on our life and on our work. The story that I wanted to share was from very early in my career. It was really my first full-time job after undergrad. And I worked for Kinko's, which is no longer around, but it's turned into FedEx Office now. People know Kinko's. And I worked as a shift leader before becoming a regional training coordinator. My first manager, his name was Mark, and I believe it was the very first performance review I ever had with Mark. He did the regular performance management. You know, we looked at my past performance and we set goals, and, you know, he had me rate myself and he gave me a rating, and we were really talking about skills and capabilities around the job. But then he transitioned the conversation. He said, it was very simple. We've talked about your skills, but do you know what your talent is?
Okay.
And I, you know, it kind of put me on my heels. I was very comfortable talking about my job accomplishments and what we had done and these things. But apparently this is something that he made a practice of. He tried to observe the people who worked for him and call out not skills, but inherent capabilities, talents that they had. And he tried to really focus in on what is talent that sets someone apart that I could call out. And all he simply said to me was, your talent is that people really enjoy working with you.
Oh, wow.
Very simple. Like a almost a, it's an affirmation from him to me, just a simple compliment. As I continue to work there, as I move through my career, and even years and years later, it's always stuck with me because it was that statement, him calling that out as a particular talent that I had, which is very difficult to see for yourself. You know, sometimes these talents, they have to be observed externally. You know, took him very little time, to, you know, cost him nothing, but he gave me this affirmation. And going forward, when I faced difficulties or when I was changing into new roles or taking on new responsibilities, it would come back to me. It really imparted in me some confidence to maybe try things that I wasn't completely comfortable with or get into situations where I was really stretching as far as skills and knowledge. You know, whether or not it was true, that's the other part of it is, you know, I was just naive enough to just believe him, just to take him at his word and to kind of accept it. But unbeknownst to me, I had really internalized it. It came back to me in difficult situations, challenging situations later in my career. You know what? If all else fails, people like to work with me. How can I, you know, how can I make that work in this situation? It was just a small, I don't even know how much he thought about it. It may have just been an offhanded comment that he decided to throw in, but it was really that small affirmation very early in my career, I think has had enormous impact.
And it became a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense.
Yeah, by accepting it, it became sort of my affirmation. It's just something I believe, something that I just kind of took on, I guess, faith, but applied it. And apparently this was, I found out later, this was a practice. He tried to do this with everyone. He tried to really call out a talent he thought they had above and beyond, separate from skill, just an inherent attribute that they had that he valued. I can't imagine how that practice had paid him benefits in, you know, retaining staff and improving performance and having people willing to kind of step out and to work out that talent that he had named in them. Certainly for me, it became part of, you know, just part of my, how I viewed myself and in a positive way. Again, it at the time may have been a very small thing for him, but it paid long and kind of deep benefits for me.
When I was listening to this, I was thinking about my experiences with performance reviews. And just like you said, you rate yourself, they rate you, you talk about the rating differences and similarities and about the your strengths, your skills. And then I thought you were going to say he transitioned from skills, talking about development. Here's how you can develop. But he did something unique that may have been related to the latter, talking about talent, which is a refreshing idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of leaders struggle in doing performance reviews, performance management activities, because there's some expectations that are just built into it, you know, to do it well. We know that there are effective ways to provide feedback and to set goals. And so we build those sort of into processes, but I feel like a lot of managers and leaders are put in a position where a performance review is an opportunity for the employee to sort of lose or for the manager to be put in the position that they have to take something away from someone in doing this. Maybe if they have to give negative feedback, I know a lot of people, or even if it's stated in a positive way, but it's, you know, you're rating their performance as less than acceptable. But this was something that as a leader, he could give me. Like it was a gift almost. Like here's something positive that I can bring to this and give to you. And I can only imagine that made the experience, his experience of that review process better as well.
Part two, removing barriers and obstacles. What is one factor that can increase substantially the effectiveness of training? Well, the answer is the manager. When managers send employees to training, how they prepare them, what their expectations are, what they do, the managers do, while the employees are at training, and what managers do afterwards can support, reinforce the learning objectives. It's really important to have the support of the manager. Support can come in a lot of different ways. For example, just saying, hey, this training is crucial is one way of showing support. And even asking employees to share what they learned with the team when they come back from training, that's another way that really enhances what the employees learn because they know they have to talk about it afterwards. With the example you're about to hear, Chris illustrates how one particular manager supported the team who needed to change substantially in how they supported the business. Here's Chris and his story.
Sort of set the scene. A lot of my work involves working with talent teams, so HR or learning and development teams, and trying to help them work in a more strategic way. And what that means is simply moving beyond the solutions that they provide to partner with business leaders, really understand the needs and the goals of the business, dig down to root causes for why those goals might not be being met, and then aligning any ongoing work or solutions with those root causes to produce the goals, really moving from just being a learning person or a talent person to being a business person, a partner to the leaders in the business. This is not always a comfortable transition, and that's where I usually do find these teams, is that they're trying to transition. But if I'm a learning or an HR person, and I'm most comfortable delivering a solution, I'm an expert at providing that solution, whether it be learning interventions or compensation plans or whatever solution I'm most comfortable putting into place. When I'm asked to really step out of that role, to focus my attention less on that solution where my expertise lies and more on sort of the business of the business in which I work, I have to ask different questions of my clients. I have to work with them in a different way. When my client of many years calls me and says, hey, I need a learning program and I need it fast, you know, it's in this new role, I'm expected to ask some more questions than I normally would and understand why are we doing this, putting the results before the solution.
It's so much easier to just say, tell me what you want. I'll do it because that's what I'm good at, you know, very tactical and very comfortable.
And it feels really good. Like when you become expert at those things, it feels good to do that and to be able to do it, you know, well and quickly. But, you know, I talk to a lot of experienced people, particularly on the learning side, who become frustrated in their careers because they are expert at providing these solutions, but they're not aligned with business goals or strategies. They really can't point to, here's the impact that I've had in our organization. And that's where this change comes about, where leaders recognize this and they want their teams to work in a more strategic way. Well, because of this work, that's where I get to observe a lot of really positive, powerful leadership at play, because the leaders of these teams who are my clients are really trying to foster this change. Observing the way that they talk about this and that the way they support their teams has really been impactful for me. So I'll share one story in specific. This was a technology company, and we were working with an HR group, and there were about a dozen HR practitioners who were undertaking this transition, trying to work more strategically. Of course, I was working with their boss, who was a senior VP in HR, and she brought me in, and the woman with whom I partnered for a long time, Dana Robinson, brought us in to facilitate a two-day workshop, and then we did some coaching as a follow-on. On the second day of sort of the primary workshop, we always do some action planning.
Okay.
What we do is we ask people, we've given you a new model. We've given you a different mental model for thinking about your work. We've given you a modified process. We've talked about how you are expected to partner differently with leaders in your business. As you carry this back, as you seek to apply these new skills, what are the challenges that you'll face? The leader with whom we were working was there. She listened very carefully, very intently. Once she had kind of heard the feedback, she said, can we pause? Can I have some time? She's the client.
Sure.
I love it when they buy in and when they really, you know, want to show their support to their group. And so she stood up, and I remember the phrase that she used. She used a military analogy. And she said, what I'm hearing is that you're concerned that you are going to ask some questions of our clients internally and that they're going to be upset with you because of the way that you've asked these questions. or people are going to make requests of you and you're going to start to push back on those requests, that's going to be difficult. And I'm also hearing that while you're trying to do this more strategic work, the quick hit sort of tactical transactional work that you have to do, that's still going to be there and it's going to take away your time. And so she used this military analogy, says, what I'm hearing is that I need to clear the airspace so that you can do your work. And that really hit me, clearing the airspace. And apparently this is a term that she used a lot with her team. It's a military analogy, right? And it means basically if you're going to go in and you're going to have a fight on the ground between, you know, your army and your enemy, that before you do that, you control the airspace. In other words, if they've got planes in the air, you send in your planes and you knock them out. So that while I'm on the ground fighting, I don't have to look over my shoulder. I don't have to worry about something up above me. I've got air cover above me. I've got this support. And so she used that analogy, said, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be clearing that airspace. And then she went on to enumerate how she saw that she could do that. That was sort of the middle of the second day. She exited after she gave this analogy, and she went to an office adjacent to the conference room that we were using. And she got on the phone and started sending emails. And she came back at the end and she said, these are the people I've already talked to. She just dived in with kind of both feet. And she said, I'm holding you accountable to changing your performance, but this is how I'm changing my performance in support of that. And she said, I've talked to this executive. I've talked to this senior VP. I've talked to this client that we've worked with before. I've described everything we're doing here, what we're trying to do different. They're on board. You can go and talk to them right now today. And they're going to expect you to be working differently. She said, I've pulled these people aside. I've reassigned them. They're going to take over some of that more tactical transactional work for us. We're going to centralize it here. That's off your plate as of now. And so she was just very proactively taking her part. You know, we talk a lot when we do this kind of talk about changing this role to be more strategic. We talk about partnership with clients. And we talk about that the learning or the HR professional has to take on some of the accountability, but they have to share that accountability with their partner, or it's not a real partnership. Well, this was the best example I've ever seen of a leader being a partner and saying, I'm expecting this of you. I expect my team to do these things. I know it's hard and I know it's new. So because of that, I'm going to be your partner in this. And here's what I'm doing differently. And she described it in great detail. It was a rousing speech that she gave when she talked about this air, clearing this airspace. And then she demonstrated it. She walked right out of that meeting and she started doing it and brought back some tangible results. And I talked to some of the people who were in that session and they were like, I'm really excited to do this, because they had already seen their leader moving in that direction. So now moving in that direction for them became much, she removed so many barriers, became much easier. And instead of being, as they had expressed earlier, sort of anxious or hesitant about this, now they're on board. They're all moving in the same direction. And to me, that was just a very inspiring example of a leader stepping up and enabling people to perform the way she wanted them to.
The whole time you were talking, I was thinking, man, this is ideal in removing barriers and enabling people to be successful, changing the environment so that people can be at their best and decrease what you talked about earlier, some of that discomfort.
And it was very tangible too. A lot of times we'll do planning sessions like this and it will be somehow pushed off in the future. The leader will say, well, I understand we've got challenges, so we're going to set up some meetings to talk about and do this. This leader jumping in and really moving in that direction in a positive way. Now, of course, she had been planning for months, right? She knew that she wanted to transition this team and move it. So she was well prepared to do that. But the momentum that she created, and sometimes I think that's what people most need, is they just need momentum to start moving in a new direction. The way that she sort of tangibly created that on the spot almost was just, you could feel it. I mean, it changed the energy in the room as they left that day.
Part 3, feedback with positive affirmations. If you're a manager, how can you help your direct reports develop and grow within their role and prepare for the next one as well? There's several different things that you can do, and Chris offers some specific ways that have been effective for him. Here's Chris.
You know, I always think in terms of application, and we've talked about a lot of things. I think the easiest application from the stories that, you know, we've kind of talked through today is probably just that simple, small, positive affirmation, particularly with someone who's new to a team or new in a role or early in their career. Look for what their talent is. Look for what they inherently bring to the group, not a skill that they necessarily could grow or need to grow, or maybe not even a skill that they have coming in, but more of something inherent, a capability that they bring. Are they great at forming relationships? Well, compliment them on that, because that could be a real asset to your team. Are they good at connecting dots? In other words, do they bring insights that are sort of, you know, unusual, or, you know, they bring a different perspective to a team or an organization? Call that out. One of my favorite sort of inherent capabilities that's very difficult to teach people is comfort with ambiguity.
Yeah.
And particularly in the performance field, you know, that we focus on, if you're really going to do strategic work, you have to be comfortable not knowing all of the answers at the beginning. Like, you have to be comfortable with ambiguity. And it's very difficult for people to learn that. But when they have that skill, I have found, or when they have that inherent talent for just being comfortable with not knowing everything and being a little ambiguous for a while, I think those are some of the most effective creative people and consultants who have that talent. As far as leadership, for me, obviously I shared it had a big impact. Just a small positive, name someone's talent that they maybe can't even see themselves, and see how that little seed sort of planted, if they take it to heart, how it encourages them over time.
Yeah. And I like the way you said, in particular with someone new, especially if they're new to business, they don't have experience. And when they're coming in, talking about ambiguity, being unsure of what you have to bring, what you're capable of, and then having someone like you say, look, this is something that I see in you that you're really good at. This is a way you can contribute uniquely. That could have a huge impact.
Right. It sort of names their value. It's, you know, maybe I am new. I don't have a lot of experience to bring. I'm still learning a role. So maybe my skill and knowledge is improving, but not where it ultimately will be. But if you can find that unique talent and just call it out for them and sort of reward them for it, notice it, call it out, that gives them some purpose, right? Hey, this is a way that I can bring value right now, even though I'm new and it's kind of unique to me. Yeah, I think that's very motivational, but also empowering, particularly, as I said, for somebody like me who was early in my career when I kind of experienced this.
My thanks to Chris Adams. If you'd like to learn more about Chris, go to the show notes. If you have a comment or question, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail message up to 1 minute. Maybe I'll play it on the air. Thanks to all of you who support the show. If you'd like to really show your support, go to one of the places that host the podcast, like iTunes, leave a review. But most importantly, thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on.